Good morning, listeners. You are welcome to this week's Ag Report. I'm Jim Finn. Now, later on in the show, after this first segment, really, I will be talking about the village market in Holy Cross. I went there a couple of weeks ago. It's on again this morning. So if anybody wants something to do this afternoon from 1 o'clock on, why not drop to Holy Cross and stay tuned. You will hear it. All about it during this particular edition of Ag Report. Listeners, my first guest this morning is Conor Kavanagh from Chagas, and Conor's with me primarily to talk about how crops are performing both winter and spring. Good morning, Conor, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Jim. Great to be on the show again.
Okay, good to have you back. So let's kick off there. You know, what's the update on winter crops around the county?
Yes, Jim, I suppose, look, winter crops in general are looking very well at the minute. You're probably seeing them around the country. Mm-hmm. Most of the winter crops have now the heads out. So I suppose just winter wheat, firstly, I suppose crops are generally looking very well. It's very important, though, to monitor winter wheat this time of year for rust coming in, especially in some of the susceptible varieties like Bennington. It's important then, if there is rust in the crop, to treat immediately for rust. I suppose winter wheat then will be receiving its final fungicide at the early flowering stage, which will more than likely be at some stage next week or the following week, and this is to control the likes of Septoria, Fusarium and other ear diseases in the winter wheat. And you'll be going with something like Crossarrow at a litre to the hectare.
Right, okay. So that's
winter.
Yeah, go on, sorry.
That's winter wheat. I suppose, look, winter barley, you're probably seeing it. Crops are quite tall this year and very healthy looking. In most cases, they're looking very good, and they would have received their final spray probably in the last 2 to 3 weeks. And I suppose the gate is closed in the winter barley until harvest, which will probably be kicking off in about 4 weeks' time. Winter oats then, finally, for the winter crops, there was some frost damage in and maybe some slight growth regulator damage which could have been seen back in May, but generally they came through that quite well and are quite clean. Most will probably have received its final fungicide, but if not, it's important to get it on this week, as the key time for the final fungicide on winter oats is when the head is half out, or they call it the bruising stage. So that's the key time for the final fungicide on the winter oats.
Okay, moving on to spring crops then, Conor.
Yeah, I suppose, look, the biggest spring crop in the county would be spring barley, be it malting or feed barley. I suppose what I know since walking crops is there's a huge variation in crops around the county. There's some of them around growth stage 30, and there's more of them on the margin. So it's vitally important for farmers to actually get out and walk the crops, identify what stage the crop is at, and identify if any disease is present in the crop. So basically, the final fungicide goes on the spring barley crop at the on the emerging stage or the painful stage, and this gives the best response in terms of yield and also the best control of ramularia. A lot of farmers would be waiting until the head is fully out in the spring barley, but the best response is when the awns are about an inch out, so it's the painful stage, and there's new chemistry there for the control of ramularia in the spring barley, and that's Folpet. So you'd be going with a litre to the hectare of Folpet, plus a broad spectrum triazole and SDHI, which is maybe last year at 0.6 of a litre per hectare. Spring beans then is becoming more popular as well. I suppose just that's also due to receive its first fungicide at the start of flowering. So people will probably be noticing the spring bean crops are starting to flower around the county. So basically you want to be going at the first sign of infection with the spring beans with a good broad spectrum fungicide such as Signum at 0.5 of a litre per hectare. And also monitoring your spring beans to keep them clean for the season. And you might have to go in with a second fungicide maybe in 2 to 3 weeks' time if disease pressure is high. And at the minute, obviously, with the mild weather and it's quite plenty of moisture, it is high disease pressure season for spring cereals. And also farmers with potatoes, then they probably do want to be keeping an eye out for blight, as there are blight warnings in place on a weekly basis.
And maybe I missed it, and you might have said it, Conor. Did you cover aphids with this clammy weather?
Yeah, I suppose, look, with obviously with spring barley, there'll definitely be no need for an aphid this time of the year. spring beans also, no need for an AFSite unless you're seeing notching from the bean weave on the crops. I'd be unless you're actually seeing physical damage on the bean crops from the bean weevil, I wouldn't be requiring going with an insecticide. But for the potatoes, unless you're keeping the crop for seed, or you're seeing aphid damage, I'd be saying maybe hold off on the aphid, as I think it's important to allow the beneficial, I suppose, the likes of the ladybirds and the parasitic wasps, to kind of build up in their own ecosystem, which will control the aphids, like.
Okay, now moving on to something that is becoming a major problem with tillage farmers, and particularly with cereals farmers, and that's grass weeds. They're becoming a real menace in cereal fields.
Yeah. I suppose a lot of the listeners are probably seeing it in some of their own fields, and also in fields along by the road. Their grass weeds have become a bigger problem in winter cereal crops, and you're probably seeing some crops of winter barley with grass weed up over them at this stage, which means the grass weeds are very, very tall. So the big grass weed problems that I'm seeing around the county are probably sterile brome, ryegrass, wild oats, and in maybe lower cases, they like the canary grass, and maybe in very, very isolated cases, blackgrass, which is a huge problem. I suppose, look, Chagas have Enable Conservation Tillage, or the ECT project, and they're running actually grass weed seminars at the minute. So the first one was on in the southeast of the county. That was on Tuesday, the 8th of June at 11:30, and that's available on the Chagas YouTube channel. But the next two are on Tuesday, the 22nd of June at 11:30, and there's actually a monitor farm in Clonmel that's been shown on Tuesday, the 6th of July at 11:30. So if any farmers are looking for more information on these grass weeds, I suppose, look, they can get a lot of information on them webinars.
You know, at these seminars, will there be advice given us how to get rid of them? Because I'm looking back on my days as a cereal grower, there was only one way to get wild oats out of a crop, and that was to rogue it out.
Yeah, well, look, there is chemicals there now to do it, but they are quite expensive. Obviously, roguing is going to play a big impact. But through these seminars, they will be looking at things that basically your listeners can take on board. So I suppose the major thing that a listener needs to do is to basically identify the grass weed that's in the field and what kind of level of an issue it's causing. Secondly, really, is basically at this time of the year, it's very clear where the grass weeds are in the field because they're up in the crop, and if you're walking the crop. And it's important to maybe, if you have a map of the field, so just map the really problem areas of the field where there's a bad level of infection or a high population of these weeds, and basically you can maybe target this area in the autumn with a stale seedbed. So basically till it maybe once or twice and get the flush of weeds that are the seeds that are in the soil to germinate and till it again. So you'll have a lot of them taken out before going in with your crop. I suppose following on from that, a lot of the, say, sterile brome and ryegrass are generally autumn germinating weeds. So basically, if you can implement a crop rotation and put in maybe a spring crop or a break crop in instead of a winter cereal, it will reduce the population of these grass weeds. And just something that Chagas have noticed in the last number of years is basically there's been a massive build-up in terms of resistance to the herbicide in some of these grass weeds. So if any of your listeners want to get their grass weeds tested for resistance, basically they can send samples to the ECT project at Chagas Oak Park, and they'll basically just put your name and the type of weeds there, and they'll test the grass weeds for resistance, and it'll basically let you know whether it's worth using herbicide on it.
Okay, well, that's looking after our tillage crops for this session. Let's move on to other issues that are topical at the moment. I suppose one is that most of the silage is cut, Connor. What advice have you for farmers who are planning for a second cut?
Yeah, you're right, Jim. I'd say probably 75-80% of the first cut in the county is cut, and probably there will be a lot of it cut over the weekend too. So I suppose a big thing is the first cut has been heavier than a lot of farmers have expected, but I suppose the fact that the spring kind of dragged on, there was a lot of silage fed later in the spring than ideally planned. So basically it is important for the farmers to basically replenish these silage reserves for the coming winter. Mm-hmm. So, and this is obviously through getting on early fertilizer for your second cut and trying to maximize yield for the second cut, because look, we all know that the weather is becoming more unpredictable. So Like it's an awful lot better have the silage in the yard and to go looking for it. Like,
and then you're talking in terms that there's a green cert course opening up soon.
Yeah, I suppose. Look, I suppose in terms of the green cert, there's a new online green cert course that Chagas and Tipperary are running. Basically, it's after changing now, and it's basically for students nationwide now, because most of the course will be completed online through Zoom classes. And instead of the usual two-year course, it's been cut back to a 14-month course. So it's going to be very beneficial for people that are working to basically to do this online green cert. And it's for people that have a FETAC, a QQI major level 6 or higher qualification in a non-agricultural area. So basically anyone that wants to do that can get in contact with the Chagas office in Thurles, and they'll get an awful lot more information on that.
Okay, and lastly, you want to mention something about water quality across the county.
Yeah, so look, as a lot of farmers are aware, the water quality isn't improving at the rate it kind of needs to be in the county or in the country as a whole. So basically, Chagas have an ASAP advisor, Claire Mooney, who your listeners would all probably have heard talking on the show before. So she's working in the Agricultural Sustainability Support and Advice Program that offers free advice on water quality. And I suppose they're having an upcoming meeting on the 16th of June at 7:30. This will be online. It's mainly for people in the Ross Grey area with the Bunnow catchment region. And you can register for that meeting on watersandcommunities.ie on the website.
Okay, and a very quick summary from you then.
Yeah, I suppose just in summary, I suppose, look, it's important for your for the tillage farmers maybe to get the flowering spray on the winter wheat at the correct time to keep the ear clean and prevent fusarium and septoria. The on-emergent spray on the spring barley is a critical timing, and I suppose it's important maybe time of year to monitor your grass weeds and take note of areas in the field, and maybe put a plan in place to control these grass weeds. And finally, then just for the second cut side, is basically get on your fertilizer early. And if you have slurry in your slurry tanks, it's an ideal opportunity to get your slurry tanks empty for the winter and get it out after the first cut side, and it will reduce your fertilizer bill for your second cut of silage.
Okay, well, look, thank you ever so much for joining us this morning. That listeners was Conor Kavanagh from Chagas giving us some very good advice. Listeners, I paid a visit to the village market in Holy Cross. You may remember a couple of weeks ago I featured an article introducing it to the village and introducing it to you, my listeners. And to start off with, I caught up with Una Crowe, and Una's going to tell me about some of the things that have happened in the history of Holy Cross, and then maybe she's also going to set what markets in Holy Cross were like. Una, you're welcome.
Oh, thank you very much, Jim. It's great to be here. We have a beautiful day and everybody's so happy looking. My idea of the fairs in Holy Cross is, I suppose, caught in with the Abbey and the monks. The monks celebrated very much so the 14th of September, which was the Feast of the Holy Cross itself. And they also had a great dedication to St. Michael, whose feast day is the 29th of September. So that particular time span was very important to them. And on the 14th of September every year, they had a particular fair on the Green in Holy Cross, a bigger area than what we know now as the Triangle, let's say. And they had, of course, many farms around the area, and they brought their produce, and they invited the people of Holy Cross to sell produce as well. So to give an idea of what you might have had, I suppose, you would have had the sale of wool because they had many sheep. You'd have the sale of eels because the fisheries here were particularly noticeable for eel fishing. You'd have the fruits, grain, turf, milk, meat, and in later times, you would have had live geese or plucked geese because, of course, linking it in with the whole Feast of Michaelmas, the Feast of St. Michael, that particular day in Holy Cross became a national holiday even during the time that the monks were here. And the monks observed the whole ritual affairs up to medieval times, as opposed to the Reformation, from early times, from the 12th century when they started here. But the people of Holy Cross held on to the celebration of Michaelmas after the fairs had ended. And the important thing about the Michaelmas celebration was it was a holy day, a holiday, a school closing day, a work close day, and a particular mass in the morning, a particular celebration after the mass when people walked up to the fair green and back again, a benediction. Everybody after which went home and had a particular dinner, which was hardly rivaled by the Christmas dinner, and was called the Michaelmas Goose dinner. And I'm told that practically everybody, and particularly anybody living near water, reared geese. So if you didn't have them on your own land, you booked them from people who did have the geese. And the Michaelmas dinner, middle of the day, I believe, or early afternoon, was a big affair. You had all their own produce, their goose, their stuffing, their applesauce. And afterwards, you had whatever could be got from apples, pies and tarts and so on. They relaxed for a while, and it all ended up, I believe, with a lovely Michaelmas dance in the evening in wherever. But apart from Michaelmas, you're talking about the Fair Green. The Fair Green was less noted for something else that happened in September 1947, the 19th of September, when James Fintan Lawlor came to Holy Cross, and he held a meeting on the Fair Green in connection with tenants' rights and withholding rent. Now, he had expected 10,000 people to turn up, but he was disappointed because only 4,000 turned up, mainly because Daniel O'Connell's son, John, had spoken against this meeting because he felt there was a slight tendency within Fintan Lawlor towards violence or agrarian unrest. And of course, that was followed afterwards anyway by the Young Ireland movement and the Éirí Amach, you know. So that funny thing, Paddy is here with me, and I think he was partly involved in the launch of a book last September on the same date in Holy Cross to commemorate the Great Big Fair. And it was the life of James Fintan Lawlor by a Dublin man whose surname was Bruce. And we had a small crowd, and maybe Padre would like to talk about that particular launch. We didn't have too many people because of lockdown. We were allowed 50, but I think we had less than 50, hadn't we? Yeah.
Okay, now let's thank you very much, Una. By the way, I don't see any geese here today. Not even Joe Hammersley has a goose over there.
Well, I suppose it's too early in the year. We'll wait until we get through the summer first, and you'd be amazed what might appear in September.
Yeah, and before we do go away, and in my time, you know, Michaelmas, the 29th, was a holiday in the parish. There was a lot frowned about it when I was going into Thurles CBS, that we were taking a day off. But we used to come to the old abbey before it was all renovated like it is now, and we had mass inside in the abbey. And a bit like what you said, we went home and we had our dinner. I don't know whether we had a goose, but at least we had the dinner. So, look, thanks for sharing those memories with us and that little bit of history.
Thanks.
Pat, can I come to you? Una called you Paddy, but I call you Pat.
Well, I'm called everything, and it's not too bad if I'm only called Paddy or Pat or him.
Pat, you're very, very interested in antiquity, in, you know, the revival of things like this market.
Yeah. Well, I am. I love history, and I have my own heritage centre over in Cormacstown there. I've been collecting bits and pieces for the last 30 years or more, all over the country. I used to drive for a living one time, and I started collecting old creamery items. The old creameries around the country were falling down when I used to take in a bit of veterinary medicine, and I'd ask the guys any chance of a ledger or any chance of a scales or something like that, and that's how it started. And I got all these bits and pieces, and then other pieces would turn up, and I ended up with a whole heritage centre. I have a dairy creamery laboratory, I have the history of the travellers done in one area, I have a forge, carpenter wheelwright shop, school room, bit on photography, and I have an old kitchen set up in the old traditional way with the dressers and the china and all the old bits and pieces that went with that. So when they started talking about the market here in Holy Cross, of course somebody volunteered me to to be part of it. So They asked me would I bring over a few props.
Yeah.
So the stuff you see outside the gate there.
The pig in the barrow outside.
The pig in the barrow outside.
Right. Okay, now we must say the pig isn't alive.
Yeah, the animal rights can relax.
Okay.
He's not a real pig, but I brought over a few old sacks, a Guinness sack outside there.
Yeah.
And there's a few other things. I have John Blake's messenger bike. John Blake was a butcher inside in Thurles. And his son, Jack, owns Dew Valley Meats at the moment. And John Blake gave me his old messenger bike many years ago. It was all wrecked. I brought it home, got a basket made for it, put a front wheel on it, painted his name on both sides of the plate, and took it back in and showed it to him. John is dead and gone now, but he was delighted that he had given it to me, because he said it's restored now, and because he said my property there on Croke Street will be bulldozed one of these days, back a number of years ago, and that will be gone forever. So I kind of see myself as someone that keeps the past and keeps the history, and if I see something being dumped of a historical value, I'll try and scrape it back from the fire before it's gone, so we can have these things left for the next generation. And so that's why I'm here today. I'm kind of the props man for the front gate. So
that's all you are, only the props man for the front gate. The bike looks very well outside as well, by the way.
Oh, I painted a sign for the Holy Cross Market, and I put that onto one of the messenger bikes. Yeah. I'm usually caught for props, as you well know, Jim.
I know.
In the drama a couple of years ago, I was chief props man for that as well. Someone volunteered me for that as well.
I know, and a very valuable asset you are. Talking then about your own museum, as we call it, out in Cormac.
Yeah.
Are you open every day, or does somebody have to give you a ring to open
it? Tis like everything else. It's better to give me a ring. Yeah. And let me say, everything was closed down for the last over a year because of this pandemic. But it's great to see even the market like this. There's a bit of life and people are coming out, and
people
love meeting people again. And we Irish are like that. We are just chatty people. We love meeting each other. And the museum is open, but it's better to give me a ring, because like anybody else, I could be down the road, I could be in town, and so we're open all the time. And at the moment, we're open in a new tourist office inside in Thurles as well, Lorna Park is. So that'll be open in the next couple of weeks, and there'll be a couple of volunteer guides in there. And thanks to the county council, they give us some funding to buy seating and all this kind of stuff, and we have it all prepped and ready to open in a couple of weeks' time. And the guides that will be in there are going around to the different sites at the moment. They were out in my place the other day. They were here in Holy Cross. They were at the Rock of Cashel. So they're all visiting the place they can visit to familiarise themselves with what they'll be talking about inside in the tourist office, because it's no use coming into a tourist office and someone asks, what's Holy Cross Abbey like? What's Farney Castle like? And they've never been there, but that's how we got around that. So all the guides have visited the tourist venues.
Okay, and if somebody wants, have you a telephone number if somebody wants to book in?
I have a telephone. My number is 085-713-1584, and inside in the tourist office when it's open, my leaflets for Cormacstown Heritage Centre will be there, and I have some here at the fair today, my leaflets for Cormacstown Heritage Centre. They're at John Donoghue's stand here at the fair.
Okay, well, look at Pat. Thanks very much for
having
a chat with. Okay, that listeners was Pat Slattery, and before that, I was talking to Una Crowe, a local historian and somebody who has been a massive addition and source of information here in the parish. Listeners, at the village market in Holy Cross, I caught up with Joe Hamersley here with all his lovely beef and lamb. Joe, it's good to talk to you again. Haven't spoken to you since I met you in Thurles many years ago.
Yes, Jim, and it's good to talk to you, and you're very welcome to the market here in Holy Cross on this lovely sunny day. We've been aching for a day like this, and we've had a lot of rain. But we're delighted to be here, Jim, at the market in Holy Cross, because as a family, we're very proud of our own beef and lamb, the amount of work that we put into preparing it. And we're privileged to be here, Jim, and we're privileged with the quality of products that we have.
And Joe, you came over the border from Connolly down here to Holy Cross. You're after, I suppose, invading the parish, but it's good to see you down here.
Thank you, Jim. Yes, I also came over the border here to get my good wife.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, history repeats itself. So did my father.
Right.
He came down to Holy Cross. My mother is butler from Bakestown, Holy Cross.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of association, Jim, with Holy Cross back through the years.
Right, yes. That's nearly as bad as my father went down to Kilkenny for a wife and my son went down to Kilkenny for a wife as well.
There you are, Jim. History keeps on repeating itself. Yes.
So there's a bit of fun in our house.
There is, indeed.
A bit of an All-Ireland on or something, Joe. Joe, how is the butchering business going? Now, it's been a very tough year.
The butchering business actually, for the last year, Jim, was great.
Yeah.
The lockdown helped us immensely. Hence why an awful lot of butchers are still going well today in business. It was a bad year for a lot of business, but it was a good year for local butchers and butcher shops. And we were very pleased, Jim, with the year we had. Our business improved a nice bit, you know. So, but Jim, we stick with it, trying to do it right all the time. And I believe that's very important. All my meat, Jim, is, that we have is hanging on the bone for 3 weeks. On the bone now, Jim.
Right.
For 3 weeks before I produce it in the shop and break it down.
Okay, yeah. And tell me this. Are you killing yourself now or do you get somebody else doing
it? No, Jim. I buy the cattle and sheep myself. Yeah. I go out into the fields and look at them. And then we kill of a Thursday evening. Yes,
okay.
I still have my abattoir, Jim.
You're one of the few now, Joe. You know, there's only
a few
of them left in North Tip anyway. I don't know about the South.
No, Jim, they're very scarce every place, all over the countryside. They're nearly gone. But I'm very proud, Jim, of the work I do. I go to the fields, look at the animal. I'm very particular about what I buy, Jim. It will be mostly nearly Aberdeen Angus heifers or whiteheads. Yeah, I'm not that gone in the foreign, the continentals, because they tend to be very dry. In the Herefords and Aberdeen Angus, Jim, you have a nice blend of fat through the meat, and that helps to mature it and make it nice and moist.
You have what they call the marbling in it.
That's right, Jim.
And that's extremely important,
yes,
Joe. Yes,
yeah, very important. Yeah.
Right, okay, I'm looking at you here and you're selling a little bit more than meat. I see a few bottles of milk in here as well.
Yes, yeah, we have a stall also, Jim, at Tullow's Farmers Market, also every Saturday morning, and we have fresh milk, would you believe it, straight from the cow, and butter, Jim, as well, from Drum. From Drum and Inch, and Helen Julie sells that every Saturday morning, Jim.
Yeah, Sean Oaks.
Sean Oaks, that's
Sean
right, Jim.
Oaks,
I
is Sean Oaks, mate.
Yeah,
Sean and then Oaks, and then you have some prepared food as well.
Yeah, well, no, everything we have here, Jim, you have to cook it. What you're looking at there, Jim, is chicken goujons.
Yeah.
But we just make them. They're not cooked. We make our own chicken goujons. Yeah, but you have to cook them.
I know you have to do the cooking.
Yeah,
but
you have.
But they're like going into some place and buying the spuds washed.
Yes.
You have nothing else to do and throw them on the
throw them on. That's right, Jim. Yes, yeah. That's right. Yes. Yeah, they're very popular now, you know.
That's very,
yeah,
very,
very
important.
Popular. Yeah, very popular.
Yeah. Okay.
But everything else, like we be... like everything else, everything sells well at the moment, Jim,
good,
you know,
good.
Because I'm very confident about what I'm selling. And that's, I think, the main thing in life, Jim. Be confident in what you're doing.
Yeah, but you're doing a good job, Joe. That's the reason that's the reason why. You're particular about the animals that you slaughter.
Yes.
You make certain sure they're at the right stage to slaughter.
Yeah.
You hang it for long enough.
Yes.
So it's right for the customer.
It's right for the customer, and the customer will come back, Jim, if it's right.
Oh, he will. My mother had a theory, a Kilkenny woman, of course, not a Tipperary woman. She used to tell her butcher, if it's not right, I'll bring it back to your coat.
Yes, and then try eating it. Good man, Jim.
Okay, look, Joe, as always, it's a pleasure talking to you.
And you too, Jim. Thank you very much.
That listener is with Joe Hammersley, who is the butcher up there in Canolty, here at the village market in Holy Cross. I also met Michael Ryan from Knockrow with his beautiful vegetables and a whole lot of other things. Michael, you're out here in Holy Cross. You had a quick run this morning from Thurles to Holy Cross.
We had to try and get here on time. It was a bit of a rush, all right, but sure, we make the best of it anyway.
Right, I was running into town for a message and I saw you packing up.
I was packing up in a hurry.
Right, okay.
I can't go too early because we have some late callers in Thurles, so you can't neglect them anyway.
Right. Okay, and you have a wonderful display here in Holy Cross.
I have, yeah, they're a good old display, and sure, most of our stuff is just really from now on that our crops are starting to come in, you know.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Talking about crops now, how are your potatoes, etc., getting on at the moment?
Well, they're all safe enough anyway. We were taught maybe that with the frost in May, we might get a little shot, really, especially with the earlys, they were up so strong, but they seem to have survived it anyway. We got away with it.
Did they get burnt now?
No,
because we
no,
had one
no, no,
couple
had,
of nights of very hard frost.
No, they didn't seem to get any singe at all.
Right.
Yeah. So we're hopefully that we'll have a nice crop.
Okay. Now, for the benefit of those who'll be listening to us on some Saturday morning when this programme goes out,
yes,
will you just give me a taste of what you have here on sale at Village Market in Holy Cross?
Well, we're nearly at the end of our own potatoes now, but we have a few Italian ones coming in, and the Irish ones which will be on in about a fortnight's time, and it will be a month before my own ones will be there. And then we have turnips. Season is nearly up for turnips too, but again, I have early turnips sown, though they won't be that long either. Cabbage and a bit of broccoli and cauliflower, it's all on its way, you know.
Yeah, you have some lettuces here as well, like we're coming to that time of the year.
No, we grow them. I start them in the tunnel and we plant them out. Plant them out in the trays and I sell them. They're actually grown coming in here. So
right.
We just cut the head out as people want it.
Okay, and then what about the carrots?
The carrots aren't their own at the minute.
Yeah, not their own, but you have your own. And
oh, we have our own, yeah. You have our own.
I'm sure I have carrots myself and they're only barely...
Oh, yeah.
Dibble
yeah.
more than a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, we're normally in this part of the country, we would be that little bit later
unless
you have a good cover on them, you know.
Righty-o.
Yeah.
Well, look, I hope you enjoy coming out to Holy Cross every second.
I hope so, too. Yeah, unless they run me out of
weekend. I don't think they'll run you out of Holy Cross.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not that far away.
Okay.
Don't be afraid.
Look at Michael, there's a whole lot of people here want to buy your stuff.
Good,
I better let you off, okay?
All mad to
thanks
with
very
money.
Much. Thanks very
Thank
much,
you,
Michael.
God bless.
That listener was Michael Ryan from Knock Road, just outside Thurles. Listeners, one of the people I met at the market was Siobhan O'Mahony from the Rock in Ballycal, of course, another good parishioner here in Holy Cross and does quite a bit of work in her time for the parish. Siobhan, this is a new venture here. How do you think of it?
I'm delighted with it. Absolutely. I think it's fantastic. Especially after COVID and lockdown and not seeing people. I love the social element of something like this, where you come out, people get the opportunity to meet each other. And of course, the weather today is really adding to the situation. Yeah.
Of course, we don't know what it's going to be like when the weather gets bad. But one would hope that what has been generated over the past 2 weeks here, that will live on. Because sometimes it starts with a flourish and then it dies. So they need the customers like yourself.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think, once something gets established at all, I mean, we can dress for the weather. Isn't that what it's all about? Do you know what I mean? But it's about getting out, it's about meeting the local people, and it's about giving the local producers that opportunity that hasn't been there for them up to now. So it's fantastic. I think support for the local community is what's paramount, really and truly.
Now, Siobhan, I hope you bought a big shopping bag with you.
I did indeed. I did indeed, and I intend to fill it.
Right, you intend to fill it. Look, thanks very
Jim.
Much for having me a few words.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Siobhan.
Take care.
Listeners, getting back to some of the stallholders here at the Village Market in Holy Cross, I've caught up with Aoife Sutton. And Aoife is here with lovely sweet things to eat. Aoife, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thank you.
Okay. And, of course, I suppose we can't talk to you without remembering your uncle.
Yes, my poor Uncle Mick. Yes.
Poor old Uncle Michael, as we've all known him.
Yeah.
A great man for organising walks
and
doing work for charity.
Yeah, he's a great person.
He'll be much missed, won't he?
Oh, he will, yeah. It still hasn't kicked in, I suppose, really.
Yeah.
Because we haven't got to have a family event yet, you know. So we haven't missed him rightly yet, you know.
Yeah, and a lot of us then, all we could do was go to rip.ie because it happened during lockdown, and, you know, we couldn't be over at Dunkern, etc.
Yes, I know, and I'm sure he'd be here today.
To celebrate his life, really, with the family.
Of course, yeah.
Because that's very important.
Yeah.
Anyway, You're here selling cakes. Are you a bit of a baker?
I'm an amateur baker.
Oh, an amateur.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
I'm a nurse really by trade, but I bake a lot. So when I saw this opportunity come up, I said that I would go for it. And then we had the first market 2 weeks ago here in Holy Cross, and we done really, really well. So we said we'd come back today.
Right.
And it's a beautiful day. We're all in our T-shirts. It's so nice. Everyone's out and about. Everyone's chatting. We're all socially distanced. We have our masks on. So it's great to be back out and meeting people. And we've done very well business-wise as well. We're almost halfway sold out, so...
We're almost halfway sold
yeah.
out. Started at just a little bit before 1 o'clock.
Yes, yeah.
And it's now only 20 to 2, so...
Yeah.
You're nearly there.
Yeah, now we sold out the last day. We weren't organised enough. But this time now, we've come a bit better prepared.
Right.
Yeah.
So at what time in the morning did you start off baking or yesterday?
We done a lot of the cakes yesterday, but the breads and the fruit cakes were done this morning. So we start around 6:30. It's not too bad.
Yeah.
It's fine. Because it's when the market's only starting at 1, you have a lot of time to play around in the morning before you have to get here. Do you know?
Right. Now...
Yeah.
Tell my listeners what you have.
Okay, so we have lemon cake, we have coffee cake, we have brownies, banana bread, Bakewell chocolate biscuits, we have white soda bread, and we had fruit scones as well, but they're gone, I think. Yeah.
Right, and what's in over here? And
that's coffee cake. And that's
the coffee cake.
And we have caramel squares as well.
Right, and
yeah.
caramel squares.
Yeah.
Okay. And you have boxes.
And the Village Market Holy Cross provides us with the stickers on top, which was great. They gave us them this morning. And my boxes I get locally. Everything is locally sourced. And it's a great day out. It's great to be here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you told me you were a nurse. Has the past year been very difficult?
Yeah, it was a tough year. Tough year in everyone. I go between A&E and Tullamore and Paterson's Nursing Home in Roscrea. So obviously the A&E is very difficult for the last year. It's been tough on everyone. I think nurses and everyone alike... The PPE is difficult every day, but you just get on with it, don't you? You just learn to live with it.
Right, but but it must be very difficult to be a nurse and people can't come in and see people because if somebody visits you in hospital, if you're in hospital, it gives you a lift. Now, you will now, as a nurse, have to give that lift to the patient.
I know, and do you know what? Sometimes I think even in the nursing home in Paterson's, they're sick of looking at me. Do you know,
right.
It's a year later and the window visits aren't the same. Now, we're allowed visits back now at the moment, all right, but it was a much needed boost. Do you know, the older people get lonely and they want to see their family, and do you know, it's quality of life really over quantity for most of them. So you have to let them in, do you know, to see their family. And we have a socially distant room and everyone wears their mask, and we actually have the quick COVID test as well if anybody is worried about symptoms, do you know,
right.
if a family member comes in.
So,
yeah.
but it has been, as you said, a difficult year.
Yeah, it is difficult. Yeah. It's challenging. Yeah, definitely.
There's no doubt at all.
Yeah.
How are you going to be able to marry the nursing and the amateur baker?
I don't know. I suppose I'm looking this only every 2 weeks, and my boss is good enough, gives me every Friday off to get ready.
Okay, well, look, I better let you back to do a little bit of work, Aoife.
Yeah.
Put yourself out there and make sure that before I leave here, there'll be nothing left.
Of course, and have something yourself before you leave. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Aoife, and best of luck.
Thank you.
Thanks a
million.
That listeners was Aoife Sutton, who is here with lovely baked sweet things and some breads, but the sweet things are exceptionally good looking. Thanks very much, Aoife. Listeners, another stall that's at the Village Market in Holy Cross are the Nutty Knitters. Try to get around that one. Now, a bit of a tongue twister. Say it quick and you'll see what happens. Listeners, I have fallen into that trap in the past. And I have Eileen and Jill. Eileen, I'll start off with you. A while since we had a chat, but I made the right names of Nutty Knitters.
Oh,
but anyway,
we'll forgive you.
Thank you very much. Okay, look, it's good to see you again.
How's it going? Fair enough, like, you know, it's hard to get people to get back to the wearing the knitwear.
Right, yeah.
But we're getting there, like, you know, people are getting it into their head that they wash better, like, you know, than the supermarkets or whatever you want to call
them. Yeah, like all the synthetics, really.
Yeah, synthetics, yeah. So, yeah, we're doing fairly all right, yeah, kept going.
You're working away with wool.
Working away with wool. We can't leave the needles out of our hands.
Okay, so... taking one of those furry caps, how long would it take to knit one of those?
Oh, about 2 hours, I suppose, for a hat. Yeah. yeah.
About 2 hours?
About 2 hours, yeah. If you've done nothing else now, only knit the hat, about 2 hours, yeah.
2 hours, and then yeah. I know you have an awful lot of baby clothes here.
I presume
there's a big that's the biggest side of the market, the hats and baby
stuff. Oh, it is, yeah. Yeah, hats are a big thing now for the winter, but sure, I'd say hopefully we won't need them kind of for the rest of the summer anyway, like, you know.
Right, and do you knit Aran jumpers?
Oh yes, we have some there now on the minute, on the rail there at the minute, and different adult ones, like, you know. Oh, we have a few children's Arans as well, like, you know, but I'd say...
And you have traditional patterns?
Oh, we have, yeah, traditional patterns, yeah, and right. We do a bit of handmade jewellery, and we do candles. And we do tea cosies.
Yeah, I was going to get around now to this this jewellery. Like,
yeah.
Last time I was talking to you at an event, I didn't see any jewellery. But you have jewellery here now.
No, we have a bit of jewellery
now. This
will
be what they call...
Costume jewellery.
Costume jewellery.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is costume jewellery. So you have rings and earrings and...
Rings and earrings and sets, we'll say.
Right.
Necklace and earrings and lots of bracelets and... things like that.
Right, and I see you have these kind of string bands, yeah.
Little string ones. The boys likes the little ones that you can tie on the wrist, like, you know.
Right, okay.
And the girls like the more beady ones, like, right. You know.
Yeah, okay. Well, there's... In other words, what you're going to tell me now is that you have something for everybody.
Something for everybody, yeah. Yeah,
right.
Just
okay.
About...
Okay.
Men and women.
Men and
children,
women.
Yeah,
and children. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. And what's the best seller?
Best seller is the hats and the tea cosies. And the very small baby stuff.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
Yeah.
And what about the candles?
Candles is only something new with us as well. We sold a good few now last Saturday. The last Saturday we were here.
Yeah.
Sold a good few candles, you know, so... Bit slow today, but it's early yet.
Well, it is early yet. You know, you're only going an hour, like,
an hour,
and then
yeah,
to be on
yeah,
here for at least
another 2 hours.
Another 2 hours or thereabouts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you'll enjoy it.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But
especially when we have the weather.
Particularly when it isn't raining.
Yeah, it makes an awful
difference. Better have a couple of words with Jill here. She abandoned us there for a minute. Jill, you said you were too busy making money.
Too busy making money,
money.
Yeah.
Are you happy to be here in Holy Cross?
Loving it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm from Holy Cross. Well, I'm a blow-in from town, but I'm living in Holy Cross now, and I like to support the locals. And in fairness, it's such a tight network of people in here, and
right.
Everyone is so friendly.
And are you a knitter as well?
Flat
as
out knitting, yeah. Yeah, thank God lockdown is over, because if we didn't get back knitting, if we didn't get back selling it soon, we wouldn't have room.
Why, you're going to tell me there's a room in the house and there's nothing in it but
full to the neck,
but merchandise.
Yeah. Yes, full to the neck, all baby cardigans.
Yeah. Are you doing okay here now?
Doing very well. Yeah.
And of course, it isn't a day. Like the weather,
oh God, the weather was so bad. Well, the weather was so bad last time.
Oh well, now if we were here last weekend. We'd all be looking for some of the cardigans.
Yeah.
You know, at the moment we're on probably the warmest day.
The warmest
so far
day,
the year.
Yeah. We thundered the last time we were here, so it's great we're not getting washed over today.
People wouldn't be enticed to buy.
No,
unfortunately.
No. But they did.
Wool today.
They did.
Yeah.
We were flat out now last time as well. They were all buying the woolly hats.
Right. Okay.
Needed something to keep the hair dry.
Okay. Well, look, it's great talking to you again.
Thanks very much.
I wish you the best of luck here in Holy
Thanks
Cross.
Thanks very much.
And I'm quite sure this little venture will keep going anyway.
Hopefully, yeah.
With the Nutty Knitters.
The Nutty Knitters. And we're also on the farmers market every Saturday morning from 9:30 to 12:30 as well in the Greyhound
Stadium. So you have to rise out of Thurles quickly
to get out here to make sure.
Set yourself up here again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well done. Thank you very much.
Thanks a million.
Thanks.
Bye.
Listeners, before I go this morning, just two things. To remind you once again that the village market is on in Holy Cross, and it runs from about 1 o'clock until about 3:30. And also over the weekend, today and tomorrow, we have the open days in My Aleph House. That, listeners, is AgriPort for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show and that you will join me at the same time next week for another AgriPort on Tip FM. Coming up next at the news at 10 o'clock. And after that, Eamon Dwyer presents Down Your Way.